drug kingpin Pablo Escobar. Some of us might have watched a show recently called Narcos based on some of his life. But what I didn't realize until recently is that at the height of his drug empire, he built and owned this elaborate zoo called Hacienda Napolis. And this thing was huge. It had its own private airport. It had a private ring for bullfighting. It had like a water park, kart racing track, and of course, all the usual animals that you would associate with a zoo. But in 1993, when Pablo Escobar was killed by the Colombian police, the zoo fell into the hands of the government, and this thing was way too big for them. They had no idea what to do with it. They couldn't afford the upkeep and expenses, and so they decided to sell and donate all of the animals at the zoo to zoos around the world and wildlife sanctuaries. So all of the animals went except for one. You see, Pablo Escobar owned four hippopotamuses, and as they considered how to get rid of these animals or donate them away, what they realized is that these creatures were too big to seize and move, and so they decided to simply leave these hippos on the compound unattended. So over the years, of course, these four hippos, they ended up escaping the compound and becoming feral hippos in the neighboring lakes and rivers around the compound. And 20 some odd years later, to this day, there are now 80 hippos feral and running wild and free throughout Colombia in their lakes and rivers. Of course, hippos are native to Africa, and so many people in Colombia see these hippos as an invasive species. In fact, local fishermen see them as a complete nuisance. Who wants to be fishing when there's hippos in the waters? But one man who has studied these hippos over the past 20 some odd years made a remarkable discovery. While these hippos might be a nuisance, they are playing and filling a vacant spot in Colombia's ecosystem. Even nuisance species, you could say, have a place and role to play in ecosystems. The man is Eric Lundgren. He's from the University of Sydney, and he's pointed out that the earth, of course, used to be covered by these large herbivores, these megafauna like woolly mammoths and these giant sloths. And of course, these animals were hunted to extinction about 10,000 years ago by humans. But with the loss of these animals, we also lost their benefits to our ecosystems today. And for Colombia's lakes and river streams, these hippos have actually come to fill this ecological niche that has been vacant for thousands of years. The benefits that these hippos are bringing to the Colombian ecosystem, it's astounding. I mean, not only are they helping combat permafrost melt and wildfire causation, but they're helping with wetland distribution as well. And what Lundgren has found throughout his research over the past 20 some odd years is this: when you have an intact and healthy ecosystem, everything has its place. Every creature and every species belongs and contributes to the health of an environment. And this idea of ecosystems is one that I want us to keep in mind as we move through this new grand series I've got planned for the winter and spring. I'm affectionately referring to it as Of Wolves and Walking and the Dangerous Book of Acts. And what I think is, when we understand the role of ecosystems, it helps us think about ourselves, our cities, our streets, our neighborhoods, our world even, in a drastically different way. And the interesting thing to me is this: when you get into scripture, the Apostle Paul, he actually likens the church to an ecosystem. He's got a sort of body metaphor for the church, and I think it's worth paying attention to. This is what he says in 1 Corinthians. Just as a body, though one, has many parts, but all of its parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free, and we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many. Now, if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. Now, it can be easy to sort of miss the revolutionary nature of what Paul's saying here, because remember, in the case of hippos, they're seen as a nuisance, and yet they're a vital part of this ecosystem. They're filling a niche that hasn't been met for 10,000 years. And what Paul is sort of getting at here is picking up on that. Even nuisance parts still have a role to play in ecosystems. And Paul is, of course, speaking to the major antagonisms of the day within the church, right? By mentioning Gentiles and Jews, slave and free, he's sort of picking up on these conflict points, these areas where the church is finding itself hard to get along. And I don't think it's hard for us to imagine those sort of things for us today, to fill in the gap with what our cultural antagonisms are and how that might fit into the church. But what Paul's getting at is, listen, whoa, there's a place for all of us, regardless of the conflict we have, because what Paul knew is this: when you have an intact and healthy ecosystem, everything has its place. Every creature and species belongs and contributes to the health of the environment. Which, of course, naturally brings us to wolves. Now, I have received some not-so-subtle mockery even before I've headed into the Wolf series from some well-meaning folk. I mean, Rob Vegas just this week sent me a picture of a sweater with a wolf on it, asking if maybe this should be my uniform for the course of the series. But I get I've made mistakes in the past with series ideas, but I think this can help us get us moving towards an understanding of ecosystems. So let me begin with a story about wolves. You see, in 1872, history was made. It marked the very first time in history that a piece of land was set aside and designated as a national park. And this particular piece of land was famous for its geysers and pristine landscape. It was Yellowstone National Park. And at that time, of course, wolves were native to the ecosystem of Yellowstone. They were residents of the area, but within 50 years, park rangers would have killed them all. And you see, at the time, wolves were seen as a nuisance, as a menace. As Robert Redford writes, he says this: "For many, wolves are the undisputed icons of nature, independence, and freedom. But for others, wolves are considered a threat to livestock, their families, and the future." In fact, that latter view would be the dominant view of history. To be honest, for the past centuries, even thousands of years, this has been oftentimes how humans have seen the wolves as a nuisance, a menace, something to get rid of. In fact, you even pick up on this idea in scripture, of course. There's a negative view toward the wolf. And it's only within the last few decades that these attitudes have begun to change. And yet, when settlers first came over from Europe, of course, to the New World, they brought with it their anti-wolf bias. And this is what happened, according to Nate Blakesley. When the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, there were perhaps as many as 2 million wolves on the continent. But by the 1920s, the wolf had been all but eliminated from the continental United States. Now, here's why I love talking about wolves, for one, as a pastor, because A, if I were to give this sermon in certain places like, say, Wyoming or North Dakota, it could split the church. Wolves are a really controversial subject even today in parts of the United States. And the thing is, only in about the early 1990s did sort of perceptions about the wolf begin to change. And in 1995, three packs of wolves from Alberta, in fact, were brought down and relocated to Yellowstone. The wolves of Yellowstone were back, and the changes to Yellowstone were almost immediate. In fact, the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone is considered the most successful wildlife restoration program that's ever been accomplished. I mean, extensive studies on the reintroduction of these wolves have shown that it brought with it what is called a trophic cascade, essentially meaning that Yellowstone's ecosystem was dramatically rebalanced in a short order of time. I mean, in short, wolves hunt elk and they also get rid of coyote populations. And those two factors had this cascading effect: less river erosion, more trees, more beavers, more mice and rabbits. Of course, that meant more hawks and eagles, more weasels and foxes, more bears, in fact, the entire ecosystem, from the tiniest nuts and seeds in the park to the smallest little streams and waterways, they all benefited. In fact, even the elk populations, which wolves hunt, benefited as well, and we saw less starvation of elk throughout Yellowstone's harsh winters. What happened in Yellowstone was an ecological miracle, and all because one nuisance species, the wolf, was reintroduced to the ecosystem. You see, with an intact and healthy ecosystem, everything has its place. Every creature and species belongs and contributes to the health of the environment. And you know, I've come to think that if we could start seeing our streets, our communities, our neighborhood cities, even of course our world as an ecosystem through that lens, it would bring us great benefits. But I think this is especially true for churches and those who claim to follow the Jesus path. Because you see, I always think there's the temptation for churches to want to sort of create an unbalanced ecosystem within themselves, create more boundaries, disregard or call out, you could say, those we deem as a nuisance. We don't want the hippos, we don't want the wolves around. And this temptation exists in every church all the time, Nexus included. More boundaries, more statements, tighten the borders, make it more clear who we're for and who we're against. Get rid of the nuisance populations. You see, but what Paul envisions here is a community that acts as an ecosystem where everything has its place and everyone has a chance to belong. But what I'm most intrigued about with Paul's analogy here is that it doesn't just stop at, hey, we're supposed to be an ecosystem. He details how this ecosystem is supposed to function. And I find this absolutely fascinating. You see, Paul was wrestling with some serious issues in the Corinthian church about shame and honor, of course. And some people, especially in this culture where you have slaves and free people, masters in the same church, he's wrestling with this idea of people who are higher and lower on the sort of hierarchy, the Roman cultural hierarchy scale. And so what Paul is trying to advocate for here is the way an ecosystem remains healthy, especially a church ecosystem, is when we honor the dignity of those who stand in the lower positions. This is how he frames it later on in 1 Corinthians. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. Because if one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. My goodness, that is rich. And I love this idea of the body, this ecosystem where, of course, everything has its place and belongs, but it's like, whoa, 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 those parts that we deem as sort of insignificant or less desirable, you could say, they're all important. They all have their place. And so we need to give extra dignity to the places that are weaker or without honor. You know, I've had body issues my whole life. I told you back in December, I had hurt my knee, and it was one of the, like this metaphor playing out for me, because even though it was just my knee, it was affecting my whole body. My knee had gone out, and so I needed to give it some special honor, some treatment, you could say, some love and tender care. And so, you know, I've been going to physio and whatnot, but I've been a fan for a while of cupping in massage therapy. If you don't know what cupping is, they put this suction cup thing on, it sucks up your skin, it hurts really bad, it leaves this big red mark, but you know what, to be honest, I don't even know if it does anything, but I've seen a lot of athletes with these on them, so if they believe in it, why shouldn't I? So anywho, I go to my massage therapist because I need some cupping done to help my knee feel better. And I get in there, and the massage therapist, she looks at my knee and she's like, ooh, this is bad. This is real bad. So she ends up putting on 17 cups all along the back of my leg, up my gluteus maximus, up onto my back. So I'm covered with 17 of these, and she's got them all on me. And she says, okay, now I'm going to let you cook for a little under the cups. That's what she said. I'm going to let you cook under the cups. She said, okay, so I'll be back in the room 5 minutes. Just try to stay still. Let the cups do their work. I'll be back shortly. Now, She leaves the room, but of course, the moment somebody says, try to stay still, it's like my body revolts against me. And so immediately my nose began to itch, and I got a mask on, right? So it's itching, and I'm trying to itch it with the mask, but I can't do it. And I realize I have to itch this thing. And so slowly I bring my hand up to itch my nose. And I knew I'd made a mistake because I could hear it just pop. One of these cups came off and I could sense it falling towards the floor in slow motion. And so I should have just let it go, but I decided to try to reach out and grab it, catch it before it smashed into the floor. But in doing so, all of a sudden, in one single instant, pop, 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 the other 16, they all popped off as well. And they all cascaded and crashed into the floor with this just like awful sound. It sounded like I was just trashing the place in there. And I'm freaking out because I know, right? Like, should I go and pick up these cups off the floor? The problem is I'm naked under the sheets, right? So I don't want to hop up, be picking up the cups, have the massage therapist come in. I'm naked with 7 cups in my hand or whatever. So I don't know what to do. And I can hear the massage therapist running down the hallway to figure out what happened. She comes into the room and she's like, well, my goodness, what happened? I said, I'm sorry. I had to scratch my nose. And she said, I told you to stay still. I'm like, what could I do? Regardless, the cupping didn't quite work, but my knee's doing better with a little tender, loving care. And this is the thing to me. When a part of the body is suffering, when a part of the body is being neglected or doesn't have the honor and dignity that the rest of the body has, special attention needs to be given to it. And so for Paul, the church is not just a body. It's not just an ecosystem where everything has its place. It's an ecosystem that elevates and brings dignity to the parts of the body that don't always receive it. But how does this function on a sort of day-to-day life? What might this mean in the context of church and community and even wider than that? Well, let me give you 3 sort of case examples, you might say, to see how this sort of plays out in our day-to-day lives. I mean, consider this. This Christmas, our leadership and staff at Nexus, we decided, you know, it would be a good thing if we sent some gift packages to certain people within Nexus. And our staff, especially Sarah, Melissa, and Murray, they assembled and distributed these packages to certain people within Nexus. And we had one criteria around Christmas, and it was simply this. We wanted to make sure that anyone within Nexus who was facing the prospect of spending Christmas alone because of lockdown, that they would get just a little recognition, just a little gift package from Nexus, reminding them that we're thinking of them and we know that this is a difficult time of year. And so that was our idea, right? Like, hey, let's just make sure that anyone who might end up spending Christmas alone because of COVID lockdown, that they get just a little bit of love and attention from us here at Nexus. And of course, saying this, I certainly hope we didn't miss anyone. But for Christmas, we really wanted to focus on that. It felt like a small way to bring some love and honor to people who might be struggling over Christmas in a unique way. Now, I want to do an imagination exercise for us here. Imagine that I just told you that, but then I said, you know what, Nexus? I got a little bit of a problem. You see, unbeknownst to me, staff and leadership, they handed out these gift packages and I didn't get one. And to be honest, I'm upset about that. I don't understand why I wouldn't get one. I mean, I'm having difficulty through COVID. I'm going to elementary school this week. I'm upset that I did not get a gift basket. Why wasn't I recognized as someone who's suffering throughout COVID? I want you to imagine that we did that and then I came on here and say that. Now, what would you be thinking about me if I said that sort of thing out loud? My guess is you'd be saying something like, Brad, my goodness, you're a spoiled little brat. That's really quite petty. Because you'd be thinking to yourself, you know what, Brad, did we not honor you on Nexus's 10th anniversary? Do you not regularly receive kindnesses from Nexus? And of course, the answer would be, yes, I do. And why? Because I'm quite literally, when you think of Paul's words and he talks about the presentable parts of a body community, that's precisely what someone like me is. I'm presented here. I'm a presentable part. And what does Paul say? He says, you need no special treatment. Brad, within this body, this ecosystem, you're not the one who needs the honoring right now. It's the parts of the body within the ecosystem that need special honoring are the ones that don't always receive it, the ones that might be suffering and hurting in specific tangible ways. This is what Paul's getting at. And I want you to remember how you would respond to me when I mention these next two examples. Remember how you would feel if I had said those things about the gift baskets. Keep them in your mind as we consider two other examples. Second, let's talk about Black Lives Matter again, shall we? And, you know, it's been a while since Black Lives Matter has been sort of front and center in the news. And I think it's important to keep this conversation alive, keep the reflecting and learning going. Because you see, for me, Black Lives Matter, it's not necessarily a political thing. It's not about endorsing a specific organization. For me, Black Lives Matter is a Jesus ecosystem thing. It's a church ecosystem thing. And in my mind, from a Jesus perspective, Black Lives Matter isn't about elevating some lives over others. To say Black Lives Matter is to really get about what Paul's speaking about here. In terms of ecosystems, it's about restoring, you could say, a lost value, a worth, and a dignity to people who have been robbed of it over centuries. I mean, Jesus was a master of this. You have to remember that the people that he hung out with a lot were oftentimes people who had lost their dignity culturally, you could say. I mean, think about his interaction with the woman at the well, this woman who is, of course, kind of ill repute, some scandalous affairs. Or think about his interaction with tax collectors who were at this time, they were seen as scoundrels by the rest of society, by the rest of the culture. And these stories are meant to communicate something more than is what is just on the page. What they're trying to communicate is Jesus is interacting and elevating the kind of people who have been robbed of their dignity over time. People who don't have honor in the eyes of the wider culture. And what I think Paul is doing in this ecosystem analogy is picking up on that, reminding us to give greater honor to those who lack it. And that's why I believe there is a real Jesus mandate for us to express Black and Indigenous Lives Matter, particularly here in Canada, and why it's about doing the work of restoring inherent value and dignity to a people who have been robbed of it. And, you know, I'd like to suggest this, that, you know, as we keep these conversations going, as we all do our own learning, I think that we ask ourselves that if we're still struggling with this idea, that maybe we ask ourselves if we're acting a bit like how I would be if I complained about not having a gift basket. Maybe what some of us need to do is some real soul searching around what it really means for us in this community to not only say, but live and try to act out that Black lives and Indigenous lives do matter. Finally, let's consider COVID-19 lockdowns. Now, I don't know about you, but there's been no shortage for me of voices suggesting that our lockdown measures are maybe too extreme. And to be honest, after spending this week at home in elementary school with my kids, I'm sympathetic to the cause. But there is some chatter out there through things like the Great Barrington Declaration. Not a bad thing to look up if you have some time. It deserves some consideration that we need to discuss. What is the actual best way to move through this COVID pandemic? But what I loved about Warren's reflection this morning is that, you know, as inconvenient as this might be for many of us, the truth is many of us can manage. It's not comfortable. It's not great, but we can manage. And here's what we know. What we do know is that regardless of our approach to COVID, the elderly and the immunocompromised are particularly at risk from this virus. They're a vulnerable population. And, you know, sure, we can debate and chat about whether these lockdown measures are over the top or too extreme. But I think within Paul's ecosystem analogy, I think we can at the very least see these measures as a way to give greater honor to parts that lack it. This to me is about giving honor to people who are more vulnerable to this virus. And I think if we begin to see and acknowledge that every person has a place, including the elderly, including the immunocompromised, than our most vulnerable. They deserve our efforts to honor and protect them. Even if we don't necessarily agree with all the lockdown measures, at the very least, we can agree these people need to be honored and protected. Now, no doubt many of you have heard about this one church in KW that has chosen to disregard lockdown bylaws and continue holding in-person services. And of course, this has garnered a lot of media attention, much to my chagrin, seeing as 99% of other churches in KW and Ontario and Canada are all abiding by restrictions. But while I hope everyone at Nexus is on board with the way we're approaching the pandemic here at Nexus, I understand maybe there are some sympathetic to the cause. And I kind of want to address that as we close with this ecosystem idea in mind. You see, I think what I would say, I won't have the opportunity, they would never listen to me, but if I had the opportunity to address this church in KW, I think I'd say something to them like this. I think I'd say, you know, church in KW, first of all, to be honest, I actually think you have a decent legal case to make. I mean, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it guarantees us the right to peacefully assemble. And, you know, while a lot of people are casting stones at this church, I would remind them that many of us exercised that exact same right this past summer while under lockdown in marching in a Black Lives Matter protest. And you could say, whoa, one's way more important, but that's a sort of subjective analysis there. So this is something we hold dear as Canadians, the right to peacefully assemble. And so I think if I was talking to the church, I would say, you know what, if you push this to the courts, which I have no doubt you will, but you probably have a case to make. In fact, I'm sure that there's nothing that this church would love more than for this to go to the top court, Canada's Supreme Court. So I would grant them this. I'd say, you know what, church, I think you have a decent legal case to make. Having said that, what I would remind this church is that while in their press releases they like to go on about their how they answer to a higher law and that they're required to worship God regardless of what the state or province dictates, I would say to them, you know what, I actually, touche, I agree with you. We do answer to a higher law, to a higher court. But what I would like to remind this church of is this. Jesus actually gave us the litmus test for what it means to pass the test of loving God. It's one simple test, and it's this. If you love God, you love your neighbor. And if you love your neighbor, you love those who are enemies, those who are in need, and those who are vulnerable. That's the test. Right there. The Good Samaritan story lays it out for us so clearly. That is the test for this church in KW. It's also the test for anyone who claims to follow the Jesus path. It's the test for us as well. And quite frankly, disagree or not with lockdown measures, I would say this, a church that insists on its right to meet during a pandemic is just simply failing the test. And I think when we lose sight of what it means to truly love and worship God, which is love of neighbor, love of enemy, love of those in need, love those who are vulnerable, when we lose sight of what true worship is, true love of God is, then unfortunately we slip into playing the role of the spoiled little brat too often. And I don't want to use those words lightly, but I think at a time like this, it's worth considering. If we lose sight of the fact that our love and worship of God has to be displayed by care for the vulnerable, we've lost sight of the plot. And you know, for a church like this in KW that's so concerned with things like hell, I would want to remind them of Jesus' words in Matthew 25 when he says this, "Some will answer, Lord, when did you see the hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you?" And he will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Then they will go away to eternal punishment. And listen, of course, there needs to be room for debate and discussion around what is the best way forward in the pandemic. But my appeal to this church, my appeal to us here at Nexus, to anyone who would claim to follow the Jesus path, it would be this. We must add the elderly and the immunocompromised to our list of least of these. And you know, in the meantime, I honestly and sincerely wish this church well and that they stay safe throughout the pandemic. When this whole thing is done, I doubt it, but when this whole thing is done, perhaps we could sit and break bread and wine, sit around the table, talk about Jesus a little bit. But I think in the end, I will say this, if I could speak to this church, however much you are being a nuisance right now, and I really do think you're being a nuisance to the church and to the wider culture, our city, but as much as I think you're being a nuisance, even still, you're part of an ecosystem and you belong. And you're an important part of the larger church ecosystem, and you're an important part of the Kitchener-Waterloo ecosystem. And so I believe you have a place, but that place needs to be done in balance, where we value the lives of the vulnerable and set aside our need for special treatment in order to honor them. For us here at Nexus, this is not easy, and good night, these next few weeks, aren't they going to be something doing school at home? But may we remember that we are part of a bigger ecosystem, and we're required to do what we can for the least of these. And as COVID drags on, it's only getting more wearisome, but we bear the brunt of discomfort to protect our most vulnerable. And I don't know, to be honest, what the other side of this looks like, what things look like on the other side of COVID or when that will happen, but I'm convinced that to care for the vulnerable is to follow the Jesus path in earnest. And beyond what is happening all around us, I hope that for us at Nexus, we may remember that this Nexus community is an ecosystem as well. We are a body. And I want to remind you who are watching, no matter who you are, you have a place here, a place to belong here. And so may we continue in ways big and small to do the work, even in these strange times, of caring for one another, encouraging one another, sharing our burdens, giving honor and dignity to everyone within this body we call Nexus.